connected to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Woo!
Woo!
Hello, AfterBuzzers. We're here during another AfterBuzz TV after show for HBO's Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 4, The Sons of Harpy.
Sons of the Harpy.
I mean, this just keeps getting better and better. We had like a full-on war here this episode, and we have some... We've got some Dornish red here.
What is this here?
We borrowed this from Qyburn, actually.
Well, wait for me to dump this all over myself on accident until later in the show.
Anyway, guys, I'm your host, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape. And we have Ben Bateman.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thanks for having me as a guest. Ben Bateman, Ben Bateman Media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram.
Autumn Chiklis joining
Hello,
us.
Everybody, I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis and on Instagram at Autumn Chiklis.
And Ryan Malady.
Ching, ching, ching. Ryan Malady. You can find me at Ryan Malady. Ha ha.
And you can follow AfterBuzz at AfterBuzz TV. You guys can call in and join the discussion at 424-256-1729. Ryan is in the live chat right now, so if you go to AfterBuzzTV.com, you can ask questions to us through there, and Ryan will let the
YouTube
panel know.
YouTube live chat.
You're on the YouTube live chat now?
YouTube live chat. Just hop on YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV and join the conversation.
There you guys go. All right, so I want to talk about the most exciting thing in this episode for me was the sand snakes.
Of course it was.
Oberyn's daughters are in the show now, and so yes. Anticipated, I already know my Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By the way, I thought it too. But then I realized the blonde isn't going to work, is it?
I mean, I'll fix that. I'm normally darker.
I'm normally
much darker. So we've got Nim, Quara, and Obara, and we've got spears and whips and daggers. I mean, I just cannot wait for these girls to release revenge. What did you guys think?
I feel like they're the Charlie's Angels of Dorne.
That's like a real deal,
right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know? It was pretty badass to watch those three just kind of... I don't know. I was just so amped, and I wasn't on their side. I'm like, no, peace. We have to keep peace. We have to keep peace. But after seeing them, like, nah, you have to go kick some ass right now.
So ridiculous drinking out.
It's like picking up for the mountain
or for Hodor. It's like Hodor's chalice
to the sand snakes.
Yeah, exactly.
To the sand snakes. Yes.
I thought that the sand snakes were pretty sweet. My only complaint was that at the end, when they're having the conversation with their mother, and the one sister goes on like kind of a needless exposition rant where she's just like, story from childhood, I'm a badass, which was kind of just,
no, there was no need for that.
No, there was absolutely need for that.
No, oh, yeah. all that was needed of that moment, you could have cut the entire monologue. All you needed was spear through the head.
I've been ready for this my whole life.
Yes,
throw
right.
A spear.
I made my decision long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you needed.
I feel like that happened a lot in this episode where they ask a yes or no question and then it kind of goes into, well, back in the day in the lands and the streets of Essos, the streets of...
Like a Tywin Lannister story.
Right?
Well, I don't think Alaria is their mother of all of them. I think these are all the bastard children of mm-hmm. Oberyn. So
that makes sense, yeah.
So they got to stick together.
Yeah.
And it really is like an empowerment for women. You could just feel it. You know, it's like
I feel it. Like, I'm ready.
Where do I sign up?
They
don't even need men. They don't need men.
They have, like, leather vests and like, kind of almost like onesies, kind of. It looks like they're wearing rompers a little bit.
I was thinking that, like, honestly, I'm going to be honest, I was looking at those outfits going, oh, I could.
Men are just target practice in the land of Dorne.
Licensed Renaissance Romper? It's a good name.
So, obviously, we have Bronn and Jaime coming into Dorne,
yes.
And this is about the worst time they could be doing this, because now we've got the Sand Snakes seeking revenge, and they're there for Marcella.
Yeah. Mm.
But the merchant actually was going to sell the information that he had snuck Jaime there.
Of course. course he was.
Right.
I mean, there's no question that he was going to. I can't believe Jamie was dumb enough to think that a bit of gold was going to keep him quiet.
I know, especially after him and Brienne got caught that one time by, remember the guy they let slip through their fingers?
Yeah.
You'd think Jamie Lannister, maybe he's turning over a new leaf.
Gotta just
a
new gold
stupidity? Leaf. I mean, that's just Game of Thrones 101 is you really don't is, just huh? trust people, especially when your life is on the line and you should not be where you are going.
You should just kill them. That's pretty much the story. Because everybody dies anyway, so like...
In
just
Game of Thrones, you either live or you either win or you die.
Yeah. Gotta kill them all, Game of Thrones.
I mean, the merchant, though, they buried him, only his head sticking out. I imagine it was hard to breathe. There's a scorpion under there with him. And then he gets a spear through the head. I mean, these girls are going to be, like, epic murderers.
Well, that's what happens when you're greedy, I guess.
Looks that way.
The merchant, he wanted more money. He tried to sell out Jamie Lannister. I think he got what he deserved.
I'm still thinking about the girls and how epic their killing is.
What do you think about him dropping to Bronn, how Marcella's his niece?
Obviously, Bronn, like, called him out there.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He called him out a lot.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, your niece, and then kept going on about it, and then Jamie obviously had his, it has to be me, it has to be me moment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be him? Just for a personal kind of glory? Well, or is it Cersei that he's trying to appease?
Maybe.
I think
he's got no one else.
I think it's Cersei that he's trying to appease, because even at that moment when they're talking about how they want to die, Bronn wants to die a boring death because he's, you know, lived this very exciting life, and Jaime wants to die in his lover's arms, and he asks Jaime, does your lover feel the same way?
That was a good moment. Yeah. That's a good question.
And obviously we all know Cersei does not. I don't feel like she does.
Not anymore.
Not at this point.
Has she been elevated to public enemy number one, do you think, on the show at this point? Like, now that Joffrey's gone, do you think she's the most hated, like, most looking forward to dying character?
She's one of the more dangerous ones now. Now that she's manipulated the High Sparrow and she's armed the faith militant that we get introduced to. So, yeah, she's starting to manipulate more power, squeezing blood from a turnip, so to speak. She really didn't have much to work with, but she figured it out.
One more question for you guys before we go to Cersei. So Jaime says that he will split Tyrion in two if he ever sees him again.
Yeah, do you believe that?
That's what I'm going to ask you guys. How did you feel about that?
He's always getting, you know, the bottom half of all these situations.
What I wrote is that, like, I feel like Jaime's feelings at this point on the show are so complicated as a character. There's, like, so much more that goes into his character, which I think is, like, a plus and a minus. Because if you remember back to the first season, I think that the first season of Game of Thrones is kind of perfect. I think that the show is really good, and it's continued to be really good ever since. But, like, the character archetypes and the dichotomy of good and evil in the first season, as well as the main protagonist being played by Sean Bean, he was the best character on the whole show, everything just worked out, and Jaime Lannister really... I guess you understand his motives. He's a more interesting character now, but it's hard to really figure out where he stands, like who he stands with, how he really feels about everybody. I think he knows he's been manipulated by Cersei to some degree. I think he loved and he hated his father to some degree. He loves his brother, he hates his brother. I don't know that he would kill him. I don't really...
I have no idea. At this
I don't
point,
think he would.
At this point, the only person who I'm sure... or the most sure I can be with his character right now that he will stand by is Cersei. But other than that, pretty much everyone other than maybe his children are fair game.
Right. Did you guys... the one thing I really, really liked just before we move on is that in the sword fight, with the one-handed sword fight with the left hand,
I liked
that they didn't do the TV thing where they were just like, all of a sudden he's good at fighting with his left hand. They showed you the struggle that he had trouble learning, and he's still bad. Like, that's great, because it's very realistic. It's like, you can't just learn to fight with your left hand in, like, a couple months.
No, Game of Thrones is great in that way, though. The one thing that one of the many things, actually, I love about this show is that it doesn't do the magical TV thing where everyone gets along at the right convenient moments, and you know how to fight all of a sudden, and... you know, things just happened to work out in a way that they wouldn't. It did happen to work out, but because of the hand move, which I thought was awesome.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's a new life-saving move that he said was luck, but obviously that's going to come back in the future and save him, because
not
a lot of people know
how
that.
How did you not think... I mean, I guess how did you not think of that? Because you don't think of that, but...
Especially because he's wearing that black glove, no one knows. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So he's got a little bit
of... He's got a secret weapon now.
Secret shield.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Wace defense. Is even better because it's defense. It's its own kind of, like,
mini
shield.
It's got a little slap.
Maybe you can get some attachments. Do, like, a little, you know, a hook a spear.
I got plenty of hands, right?
Yeah, like, right? Man of many fingers.
What about Bronn saving Jaime from the snake in the beginning?
I love Bronn.
Do you guys feel like that's a little bit of foreshadowing?
Maybe. Because, you see these guys are automatically, you know, such a cool duo, but it's like, is the trust there?
No, it's just
when he wakes up getting... Sorry.
Keep going, please.
Yeah, well, when he wakes up thinking, for a split second you think, is Bronn going to stab him in the face, you know? That not only gives the viewer some distrust, but you see it in Jamie's eyes, too. Do I really know this guy as well as I, you know, should I really have taken him with me? It really was his only option, though, because Bronn's a badass.
Yeah, I love that Bronn is back to, like, his combat days, you know? Like, we get to see him fight a lot more. Like, this season's going to be really exciting with him fighting. I think he's one of the best fighters in the show. Because. However, absolutely. I don't know that he's going to make it back.
I don't know either, and it breaks my heart.
Because they were talking about death and whatnot.
Yeah, of course. But between that and, like, several kind of shots, though, I know this is good. what is this? Where can I purchase this?
Qyburn.
Yeah.
Well, send a barrel to
imported.
My
corner.
Refill the chalice.
So, let's
all joking aside, though, what you were saying really quickly, what I was going to finish with is, it breaks my heart, but all signs lead to the fact that he might not make it back just from a dramatic standpoint. And that is so devastating to me because, one, he's a certified badass.
Mm-hmm.
Two,
big time.
Yeah, two, he's so funny. Just everything, his personality, the dialogue that is written for him, it's just so charming and silly. And he calls people out in a way that is so refreshing on this show.
Yeah.
You need him. Damn it. I guess they'll probably kill him, though, because we love him.
You kind of have to replace him if you kill him, though. And with, like Oberyn, Prince Oberyn dying, that's, like, another character who has, like, a similar tonality on the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's, like, not a lot of characters that have that tonality, so I definitely think you need him in the show, because otherwise the comic relief and, like, the guy who, like, kind of grabs the royal whatever by the nuts is gone. He's important. I'm going to drink some wine. Keep going.
Ryan, should we check in on the chat? What are the fans saying?
Yeah, well, I was just asking about Tommen. Everyone says he's just too nice to be a king. Sorry to jump. We were jumping from Bronn.
We can go to Tommen
now. I just asked, would you die? Because they were asking each other, so how would you die? Blah, blah, blah. And I think the answer is honestly the same for everybody. What is it? Warm in my bed with a belly full of wine.
Yes.
And my,
no way. And apocalypse wrapped around out of an airplane.
Yeah.
Just boom.
No, Autumn's going to war before she dies.
Hell yeah.
You need to go out screaming?
I don't know how I want to die. I feel like that's a...
I don't want to die. I'm not
freedom!
Dying. We're not... We don't die here.
Exactly.
On AfterBuzz TV.
Not the Game of Thrones.
No. Uh-uh. We're on, like, another realm here. Anyway, let's go ahead to Cersei. Now, she found a new army. She has given the High Sparrow... the leader of the faith, now, like, the militant power. She's armed them. The faith militant presence is now back. And what's really creepy about this is, like, this sort of brainwashing powers. And these are people who aren't following, like, a house, rather, like, a religion, you know? So it's very creepy and, like, brainwashing. And there was, like, some self-mutilation going on there with Lancel.
Right.
I mean, how did you guys feel about Cersei now arming these... High Sparrows.
Well,
and
you don't arm religious zealots in that way. You just don't, especially not in this world. The truth of the matter is when you... I mean, I think she has some semblance of... she knew that this was going to...
Absolutely.
She knew what this was going to do, but first of all, that whole sequence was brutal. Like,
and the music?
This part, that hurt me. That, like, seriously hurt me just to watch. And more to the point, now you have an armed...
Militant.
Group.
The faith militant.
Yeah, of religious zealots who are... They don't listen to the king, as we saw. They don't care. And it's not that I'm for the kingship, or it's just... Now you're going to get into religious war.
Right.
And that's dangerous because...
Very dangerous.
You're living in two different planes. You're living on people who abide by the law of the land, I guess, and then people who supposedly... abide by the law of God.
Religious law.
Exactly.
The equivalent of fundamentalists.
Yeah, oh boy.
So one thing that I think is really interesting about the faith's...
Militants.
Faith militants. Again, speaking about the first season, how everything was very self-contained, and then comparing it to now, I think that this show succeeds in a lot of ways when it tries to expand plot lines and give you clearly pieces that were in the book and were important elements of the book. Other times I think it fails, like when Theon became Reek isn't a great example of one where it's just kind of feels like a waste. Like, in the book, apparently, that's like a huge plot line. It really has a lot of weight to it. Where in the show, it feels kind of rushed and, like, corny, I guess, because there's not enough context for me. The same with this, where I'm just like, you're bringing this enormously influential, powerful, and, like, kind of sadistic cult of people to be sort of a pseudo-enemy. And I'm also just, I kind of feel like this is like complicating the plot in a way where I don't really need this because there's not enough background for me. I don't feel like they're I don't know. It just
where is it going?
See, that's the thing. Well, where did it come from? More so, like this just came out of left field to me.
But that much I agree with. I definitely think that it has come out of nowhere. But the thing I was actually thinking this while we were watching is Game of Thrones has a way of bringing things out of nowhere mm-hmm. and making them remarkably important and
true.
Relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
And giving them the gravitas that makes it all work. Mm. So I think that the writers on the show are so damn good. And now that it's straight mm-hmm. from the book a little bit, and you're a book reader, obviously.
I have a bunch of friends who are like fanatics. I haven't read the books.
And they spoil everything for you. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, but the writers of the show are so good. I don't think that they would bring something like this mm-hmm. I think they have a plan for it.
Well, it's out of necessity at the same time because Cersei doesn't have her council. She's sending them all away. She doesn't have any friends right now. So she arms these religious leaders because she doesn't have anyone on her side at this point. She needs an army. She needs someone to command. But the problem is, like, they're not pledged to her house. Like we discussed, they're pledged to a religious leader. So there's no taming them. And I think this is going to turn on her.
Oh, right. Yeah. She's like, she just released the mad dog. It's like she just hired the Joker.
It's like, you kind of want to start singing, like, who let the dogs out a little bit?
A little bit. But yeah, you're right. It's absolutely an act of a desperate woman to hold on to power and authority. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see how the crown takes care of it because Tommen isn't getting any respect. We have some interesting insights from people. Akash says, I didn't see a tactical advantage in Tommen's move. I saw fear and a reluctance to show any power. Mm-hmm. Everyone's chanting the same thing. You know, with as nasty as Joffrey was, we didn't want to see him at all. But we loved to hate him. We loved to hate him because we knew what he was.
Right.
You know? But with Tommen, it's like finally, he's like the polar opposite, though. He's too nice. He's too nice. He doesn't have any respect. He doesn't command any power. And you can't run a kingdom like that, especially in the Game of Thrones.
No, I mean, this scene right here just kind of spelled disaster for his reign. And Cersei's sending the council away. and the Iron Bank wants a tenth of their debt back.
They're sending Lord Tyrell with Sir Meryn.
Yeah,
with
Sir Meryn. What did you guys feel about that?
I felt shady, right?
Right. Yeah, it was real shady.
I felt like she was sending Sir Meryn to take care of him.
Oh yeah,
kind of felt that way. Yeah.
Well, she's tearing up Margaery's family. You know, she's taking Loras. She's getting rid of her father, Lord Tyrell. You know, she's like, that's what happens when girls.
Marjorie's calling
systematically kill their entire family.
Yeah, just what was that? You think I'm a bitch? Okay, well, I'm gonna imprison your brother and I'm gonna send your father off to die. And
well, there's one main player that could return. We see Margaery going off to call her grandmother, the Queen of Thorns.
Right. And she's sweet. The grandmother's sadistic. She's
well, she was responsible for Joffrey's death.
Yeah, she's great.
I adore that woman.
So she's not afraid to get her hands dirty.
I like her monologue from, like, I think it was last season when she talked about the guy she was going to marry, and then she, like, went to work and he couldn't walk the next day because he was gay.
Yep.
that was a very, 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 like, telling of, like, she doesn't mind getting her hands dirty.
Yep. No, not at all. And, I mean, now, obviously, speaking of that, you have, oh, my God, Margaery's brother, help me.
Loras.
Thank you. Sir Loras imprisoned now, and obviously because it is known throughout the kingdom, or at least within the right circles, that he is gay.
Mm-hmm.
This is really starting to become very interesting with considering it's been touched upon.
The Red Keep's
a
mess.
Yeah, well, it's the first time that there are now going to be consequences for that. I mean, they've talked about it, and he's even said, like, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to me? Well, something's happening.
Yeah, big time. It's hard to figure out what... So, actually, this kind of brings me to a question I want to ask you guys. So, you always wonder whose show is it, right? Like, whose story are we watching?
Right.
And I think it seemed in the first season like it was the Starks. It sort of became Daenerys Targaryen's story. I think it still feels, I think, mostly like it's her story. But... at this point, with like the Starks are pretty much dead, and the Lannisters are losing power like by the boatload. Whose show is it now? Is it Daenerys Targaryen? Is it her story from start to finish? When this is over, are we going to have seen like her rise to the throne? That's what I've been trying to figure out.
I think it's Stannis. I think it's the North is about to come down.
So you think it's the story is about the North?
Well, I mean, you're saying kind of who kind of has the sway? Who has the advantage and the power? I mean. obviously the mother of dragons yet, but not. I don't think she's coming over quite yet.
She's not ready
right
yet.
Now, I think right now it's Stannis and Jon Snow, and they're going to be taking these armies down to the Boltons. And then keep it going a little further, especially because there really is no strong leader in King's Landing. So I think from the north down, that's where the wrath is coming.
I guess
and then from the south up from Dorne, it's all coming
home.
My
question for you, do you mean in general, like what story is the Game of Thrones story
that's,
about?
That's what I mean.
Okay, not when specifically where we are now.
When it wraps, are you going, like, in the way that... I can't think of a good metaphor right off.
No, I totally understand. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify whether or not you meant just right now, because in that way, I agree with you, Ruth. Right now, I think there's going to be more of an emphasis on the North and how that's going to affect everything else, because we're going to get into this later. Obviously, you have Stannis going to go back to Winterfell, and you're going to have this whole ordeal with Peter Baelish and Sansa and blah, blah, blah. We'll get there. But... as the entire series is concerned, I think one of the wonderful things about the series is it's kind of impossible to tell. It still seems like the Targaryen story because that's, you know, you have Tyrion going over there right now to
dragons,
etc. But that can turn so quickly. That can turn literally with a knife to the throat.
Because it's so quick. People die in the show. And, like, did you guys get the little, like, tickle in your stomach for just a second while you're watching? We're like, is Daenerys about to just get killed right now? Like, are we just going to see her die right now?
For a second.
For a little, there was a little part of me that was like, she might just have her throat cut just right now. And that's just, left field.
No. Honestly, I feel like
not
all the...
Not necessarily in the season.
Yeah,
no?
Maybe the end of the season.
It totally could, though. That's the thing.
It could.
That's the thing about the show that's so remarkable in ways and wonderful, is you'll have just like a close-up on someone and they'll be talking and talking and then there'll be a spear through that person's head and you don't know what happened.
Agreed.
Right, but I think we need to clear out the adults first, right? And so the younger generation, like Arya and Bran and Daenerys, and Sansa, so they can rise. So I think we're still eliminating houses. We're still clearing out the older generation, and we'll see the younger grow. So let's go ahead to the wall. So Jon Snow was forced to sign off to work together with the Boltons, and obviously that's a sworn enemy, and he did not want to do that, but the wall needs people. They need supplies.
It got sentimental at the wall.
It did.
There were a lot of moments of sentimentality.
Especially when Melisandre's in the room. Just kidding.
You could tell Jon Snow is kind of wants to a little bit because
every guy on the show wants to. That's the point.
He's giving the excuses, like Stannis wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
I swore a vow. What else do I got?
What other reasons do I have?
I still love her. I still love somebody else.
It felt like it was his best friend's girlfriend being like, she'll never find out. That's what it felt like.
I don't want to.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I think she's walking sex is the point of her character. Obviously, she's very powerful, but I think every man in the show wants to have sex with her. That's the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every man watching the show?
Well, that's her power is, like, seduction.
Yeah.
But I was glad to see that she did not win Jon Snow.
I was worried for a second. I'm like, oh, please don't do it. Don't do it. You are so damn... strong and
so
loyal.
Pure.
Right, because
so
as far as the guys go, like, he's who I'm rooting for, right? He's our rooting interest right now as far as the guys go.
To me, yes. I mean, I obviously have a soft spot for Tyrion, but other than that, I mean, Jon is definitely the... he's like his... I guess he's the bastard, but he's like his father in this way, and that's kind of terrifying, but at the same time, I just did not want him... to go down that path, but he has a darkness in him because of all of the stuff that he has gone through that his father did not have, which leads me to believe that he could take a turn and sleep with her or kill the wrong
that
person.
Would kill
you know
me.
What I mean?
That would really
bother
me.
Oh, by the way,
me.
It'd be awful, but they totally could do it. Yeah. Totally could.
So how do you guys feel about when Melisandre says, you know nothing, Jon Snow? How is this going to affect Jon going forward? Because he didn't believe her visions. He's like, I don't want to see the visions. I don't want to do any of the magic. Like, I don't believe that. I don't put my trust in that. So clearly, I mean, that's something that only Jon and Ygritte shared, those words. So the fact that she knows this and says this pulls at his heartstrings, makes him maybe question whether he should believe this woman because this is something that she shouldn't know.
No.
How do you guys feel like this is going to affect him?
I think that...
I think he's going to...
Oh, I was going to say...
Yeah.
I think she represents pure evil. That's what I think. So when I asked the question about Public Enemy number one, that's like maybe in like the court of public opinion, like who do we like kind of love to hate them at this moment? I think she is Satan. So I think if you partner with her, no, I think she's supposed to kind of represent
evil. I would totally agree with that. Absolutely.
I think if she's like black magic, she's like kind of getting in his head, getting in his heart. I think that if he gives in, that's like, you know, like horrible fates will befall Stannis eventually because he partnered with her, I think.
Oh, I totally, yeah. It can't happen.
So Jon Snow,
they're setting it up to happen, but it can't happen.
Because she is pulling at his heartstrings, I think that is going to pull Jon Snow into Stannis' corner a little bit.
Right.
In a way that maybe, you know, he's not going to have to break any vows, but he is going to find a fair compromise to join the cause. And the cause really is to survive the winter. Because winter is coming, and that's, at the end of the day, everyone kind of wakes up and smells that rose and realizes that's what really matters, so let's figure out how to survive.
Right. Protecting the realms. I mean, yes, he's sworn to the wall, but also, like Davos said last episode, like, you're sworn to protect the realms, and that's why the wall exists.
Right.
So it's not like you need to just be here. And I hope he does leave the wall. I mean, right now, look at what he's doing. He's signing off on papers. I'm surprised he didn't just give that to Sam and just be like, you know, you're better at this. You sign these papers. I'm going to go fight. Because that's what John does.
Delegates, right?
Yeah. It's like he's even training the guys outside. It's like he shouldn't be in the office.
No, he shouldn't. And I was actually pleased. It was a small moment, but Sam has a bit. He's developed a bit of a spine, and he's because he's developed this rapport with John, where they're friends. He feels like he can say things to him, like, "No, this is what you need to do." He's becoming kind of like his bookie, his like right hand man. And he's not being pushed around in the same way, which I'm very happy to see.
Yes. I mean, knowledge is power, and he kind of reminds me of Tyrion in that he reads a lot.
Yes.
Power is power.
So here's a question I wanted to bring up. So everybody on the show speaks with a loosely British accent, right? This is like something that you've noticed, like this, Lord of the Rings, they're all kind of like
I
haven't noticed it at all.
So let me just ask each one of you guys, if you could like choose your sweet British accent to have, because you have some like this, your grace, like that's like Davos, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Or some like this, your grace, you know, like, you know, like they, like they, there's like different tonality to it.
Yes.
Like, what would your ideal accent be?
Absolutely.
Mine would be Little
Fingers. Your favorite?
Oh, Peter Baelish.
Oh, Peter Baelish.
He's good.
He's like, that guy's like dirty. He's like
His voice is creepy.
What's it called? He feels like his name should be Dirty Sanchez. The way that he talks. And he's got the mustache. He's like really creepy to me.
If I were going to speak in a British accent, I'd want it to be I wouldn't want it to be completely proper, but I want it to be something like this, where it's still respectable.
Sure, sure, sure. I like that. Okay.
I don't know. I just like the way it sounds. Just someone sitting on my chest.
What about you?
Oh, sand snakes all the way. Like, they've got the passion and the anger in their voice, and I can't do it, and I'm not going to attempt it, but I love them and everything they're about.
I think my favorite's like the Ned Stark accent. It's the really, it's like, I feel like I want to be able to do it justice, but it's like, I'm here to save the castle. Like, oh, like, like, I rule over my. I can't do it.
You were doing Jorah earlier.
Oh, Jorah. Actually, I take it back. Season one, Jorah. Because now, like, he was more of a cartoon character in season one. Everything he said was the same. Now he's, like, got a heart. But in season one, it was always just like, not today, Khaleesi.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We need again, very good.
No, we can do this. We can do this the best of the show like this, but actually not. But Stannis and
Shireen.
If we can just like talk about that, because they talked about such mentality.
Keeps coming back episode after episode.
There's something significant going on, and I want to kind of tie it back to what you were talking about the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking this when Sansa was, you know, lighting the candles, and I was thinking about Shireen when we mentioned that she's becoming relevant. We do have this kind of this cast of young characters who we could kill off every adult character in the show, and we still have plenty of plot lines twisting around to make a perfectly fine show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying that it could happen. So they're building her character in a way that she's mentioned, but now she's becoming significant. And the more I think about it, there's so many characters who played a backseat role who now it's their time to stand up. And as they get, this show can go on forever because it's about family bloodline. Mm-hmm. Unless the White Walkers kill all of them. And then, if that's how the show ends, I'm going to be upset, okay? I'm going to be very upset if they just come and wipe everyone out.
No, I don't think they will. But the young they are rising. Mm-hmm. And we find out in this scene that the doll that Stannis got his daughter is actually what gave her grayscale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was really a sad scene. And I also liked the fact that we got to hear that her father didn't want to send her away, is proud of her and accepting of her, because I feel like she's this child that runs around that feels so rejected. And you know what? Pain is the greatest teacher, and that's all she's known her whole life. So I think she's going to have a bright future and be wise because of the pain that she's endured.
Agreed.
Ryan, are you talking in the chat?
Yeah, I'm asking everybody what they think about Shireen. Like, there's a lot of character development. Where is this really going? Akash thinks Shireen will be given to the Lord of Light, but someone will rescue her. People are bringing up a good point that she has King's blood, grayscale, mm-hmm. and King's blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was King's blood that Melisandre is after. Mm. So she's kind of just keeping her there, maybe, on reserve. I mean, there's going to be something. Some people think Shireen will be queen in the end. Some people think Shireen is a dragon.
Oh.
Shireen's a dragon.
Because of grayscale?
Because of the
she's like an anamorph that like just stopped halfway.
Right, maybe.
So it seems like kind of opinions are kind of everywhere because she really doesn't have much of a backstory other than she's Stannis' daughter.
Well, I'm just glad that she doesn't feel rejected anymore, and we got to see that nice moment with Stannis, you know, accepting his daughter, because her mother, Selyse, is just horrible.
She's like a battered woman. It's really weird. She has no self-confidence at all. She's like, it really feels like she's been, and the weird thing is that the two of them, the mother and the daughter, since the moment they were introduced in the show, that's the only position that they've had the whole time, has been like rejected. We're not as important as the Satan woman that you're with, and like,
the mother is just a bully.
Yeah, the mother's like, I'm sorry I didn't give you a son, I'm worthless, this woman's better than me, our daughter's a disgrace. Like, it's...
Yeah, I'm not going to miss Celine when she finds her demise. Mm. Yeah. So let's go ahead and move on to Sansa now marrying her sworn enemy, Ramsay Bolton. And this seems inevitable. And obviously, I feel like Peter Baelish is, you know, wants her to become Catelyn Stark and wants to end up with her on the throne. What'd you guys get from this scene?
That pretty much.
I thought it was interesting how the scene opened with Sansa at Lyanna?
Lyanna's grave? Oh, at the grave, yeah.
And she picks up the feather and blows the dust off. That feather was placed there by King Robert when he came to get Ned Stark to ask him to be Hand of the King in the first season.
Nice callback.
He placed his feather.
Are you watching the first season again right now?
Are you?
Because I feel like there's no way you'd remember that if you were.
No, I...
Get out of here.
This guy's got a great memory.
I'm a fan. No, I remember that he put that feather there, and she just came and found it, and it seems like it kind of just wrapped up that whole chapter of Winterfell and her life. It's just a completely new place now. It's a new story. She's finding her new place in it. Peter Baelish, he finds a way to kiss this girl, you know, kind of let her know, you're really mine.
Oh, good one. That's good. You did good there.
It's like she doesn't really know what to do with herself. All she's really ready to do is survive and just take whatever comes.
To a certain extent. I don't think that she's just going to take whatever comes. I think that she's starting. We established earlier, we were talking about the fact that she's really starting to learn how to play the game. I don't think she necessarily knows her plan of action yet, but I think she's calculating. I think before, what we saw from Sansa is someone who was just taking whatever came and taking whatever came. But the Sansa that we're seeing now, I think, is cold and calculating and is looking not only Peter Baelish, but everyone around her behind their back and trying to maneuver. He even says, you've learned maneuvering from the best, which obviously he was referring to himself. But I think that she has, and she's starting to get there. So I don't think I don't think she's just sitting there and taking it. I think she is starting to plan.
That's fair. She's definitely learning.
How does Sansa feel about Peter Baelish now?
This is what I think. I think that she recognizes, and she's learning to recognize, that his weakness is that he has a heart for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's super conniving, and he's really strategic, and he's great at playing the game. But he, in fact, has eyes for her, like in a romantic way, that she can take advantage of. That's why I think she's buying in. I think she's classic woman psychology.
Take advantage of her in what way,
Person psychology, I mean.
I mean, here's the thing. I think... I think that Sansa definitely is gaining some feeling for Peter Baelish. I mean, you just don't exchange kisses with someone and rely on them to get you from place to place and believe in their plan and then not gain, like, any type of feeling or connection to them. So I think that there is some sort of connection building between those two. But I think that Peter Baelish's ultimate demise will come from Sansa. Just like you said, I think in the end, maybe he breaks her heart or whatever, and, you know, she takes his life. I can't wait. I'm super excited.
I don't know whether or not she is forming a romantic interest in him necessarily. A connection can mean a lot of things.
He's the only one who's protected her.
That's
who's consistently gotten her out of situations she didn't want to be in. Now, I think she knows that he's using her for power plays, but he also she knows that he does care about her, especially because he cared so much for her mother and so much for her aunt.
Isn't that kind of weird?
So she
really weird.
Right?
We've seen some weird things.
But what about that moment when she says to him, "Well, I guess I'll soon be married"? It was like she was inviting him to do more. That's
right.
What I felt, because I'm soon going to be married. Like, there's something
here. She was like, take
me
in the catacombs right now. That's what you got?
I don't know.
It was like if you she was basically saying to him, if you intend, because what I'm feeling is you're intending on, like, taking me, you know,
right,
on top of the world with you.
Right.
You're not going to be able to do that if I'm married, right? As in, what's the next move after that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Jon Snow and Stannis doesn't come and, you know, kick Ramsay out of bed, how am I going to take care of him? Am I going to have to kill him? Are you going to kill him for me? What's the
right.
move?
That's what I got, personally.
What's the next move is what she wants to know. And he's just like, pats her. He's like, yeah.
Something I want to know.
Has a plan.
Something I want to know with the Ramsay's characters are like, the whole entire plot line that we got with, obviously, after the Red Wedding, that Ramsay's father becoming Warden of the North, and the Theon Greyjoy becoming Reek, and that just the entire sequence that's brought us to here now.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you guys feel like your sympathies lie with those characters? Because it's like, none of them are really good guys. Theon wasn't really a good character when he got decapitated in that way, and Littlefinger is not really a good guy. He's sort of actually almost the opposite. So, like, whose side are you guys on? Like, who do you think is, like, the person that is most likely on a moral end to come out on top of all these characters?
On a moral end?
Like who do you think deserves to win of all those, just of those characters in that, like,
battle? Well, obviously, we all hate the Boltons because they killed the Starks.
And they're evil.
So they're the bottom.
They
like,
people.
They need to go,
So Theon, where does he stand?
Oh, Theon is just
like... He's a broken
yeah,
child.
Yeah, he's broken.
He's not coming back from anything.
So you're on you're on Sansa and Littlefinger's side then. That's
Of course.
At this point, I'm definitely on...
Of course.
Yeah, I think of all of them. Unless, the thing about Littlefinger is he a good guy? No, I'm not going to say that morally. He's morally the superior. He's not flaying people. I take that back. But anyway, I digress. The point is, more than Littlefinger, he's charming. Sansa is the morally the most, like, okay of them. Are you guys hearing that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I wanted to ask
you
guys.
It's the ghost of the crypts of Winterfell.
There was a lot of talk of Rhaegar in this episode.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Why are they bringing up his story again? Where are they going with that?
Maybe we're
going
to see, like, a possessed skeleton Rhaegar like we saw a couple episodes. No, that's not going to happen. I don't know. I thought it was... Yeah, it was some exposition on Rhaegar. It is true. It's been a while.
They were talking about him singing, they were talking about how, you know, he passed, after winning a tournament, he passed up his wife and then gave frosted roses to Lyanna.
Yeah.
I think it's just to remind everybody. It's to remind everybody where this all started, where this all came from, the roots of it, to get us to kind of like this character so that we can kind of endorse Daenerys' claim to the throne again. Like, so she does have a claim. And we like this guy a little bit. And he also kind of started all this. I think it's just a reference back to kind of plant our feet again from the beginning.
That's a good point.
Speaking of Daenerys, let's try to get to that really quick before we're out of time.
Well, let's talk to Tyrion and Ser Jorah's journey now to Daenerys. Do we like Tyrion and Varys, or do we like Tyrion and Jorah? Who are we shipping together?
I think they're all going to end up finding each other, but my favorite part is the first question he asks is, who are you? And the second question is, do you have wine?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that was great. One thing, you know what? I said this, like, episode 2 when we were talking about this. about exposition.
Right.
And I want to make a clear, I want to clarify something because I know a lot of people were talking about how you need to have exposition in a show like this. I completely agree. What I was talking about from a writing standpoint is the fact that a lot of the exposition that was given in these last two episodes and in this monologue in particular is less through conversation and where bits and pieces are revealed and more a like, oh, let me give you a chunk of exposition that you need to know in order for this to make sense, which can get a little clunky. I forgive it because it's so excellent and Tyrion can totally pull it off because he's like, I'm figuring you out through deductive reasoning.
That was
yeah.
good.
Awesome. Yeah.
So that was a good kind of like sneak in there. I feel like he did so much of the talking at that point. I don't know who to ship yet because I haven't seen their rapport. You know what I mean? I've just seen him kind of going, all right, I know what's happening. Cool.
I think the combo of Jorah and Tyrion to me is excellent because I love Jorah. He's like one of my favorite characters, and the more screen time that we can get with him and like Tyrion, who's like probably the best character ever on the show.
He's the best character ever in anything. I love him so much.
Is like pretty much perfect. So I'm on board with that. I ship that immediately.
Yeah, I think they're going to be friends for a while. So let's move on to the Sons of Harpy. They are fighting against Daenerys's rule and dispatching, you know, several of the Sons of Harpy on the Unsullied.
I need this.
Oh, yeah. Sons of the Harpy. Damn you!
Rest
I mean,
peace.
and then we've got that spy woman who's clearly setting up all these situations.
Yeah, she's the cuddler killer.
Yeah, I feel like
you know what I'm talking about. When
cuddle killer.
First episode where.
Right,
do you guys
feel like
she could be a leader of the Sons of Harpy in any degree?
She might like a double agent a little bit, something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, she is a double agent, but she's like more powerful double agent
than what
like Trevelyan from anyone. Sorry, it's a GoldenEye reference. Sean Bean, he was in the show too. Let's just keep talking about that.
That was devastating. That whole thing. It got kind of Star Wars-esque at a moment with all of the sword fighting.
Right.
And I started hearing the Star Wars.
We had Grey Worm, though, and Barristan Selmy take down basically the entire Sons of Harpy army that was in that little tunnel area. I mean, just the two of them took down at least, what, like 10, 15 men?
What's Sir Barristan's line from when he gets expelled? He's like, I could slice through the... What's he say?
Even now I can slice through the four of you like cutting a cake.
Yeah, it's a great line.
Awesome.
I love seeing him fight.
And
awesome.
He did. He fought. Oh,
admirable.
You know what? If they had to go, I'm glad it was like that because that was dignified shit.
Do you think they're both dead? Or just do you think they're both dead?
Yeah, did they go?
In the preview for next week, we saw Barristan on.
Yeah,
but we didn't see Grey Worm though.
I don't know. I feel like probably.
They were bleeding out pretty bad there.
People on TV can be stabbed like at least two more times than normal people and still live.
So especially in Game of Thrones. I mean, we still don't know what the mountain type esque thing is going to be.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, as long as Qyburn's around, nobody's really going to die in this show.
Seriously. But I don't know. I think that last sweeping shot of just death all around kind of solidified the idea in my head. Like, nah, they did. They're real dead.
Are we all like pretty worried that like actually what's going to happen is the dragons are just going to kill everyone? Because the way they've sold us is that basically killing the dragons is almost impossible. And like back in the day when there were dragons, they just annihilated everyone. So like once the dragons are of age, which they appear to be, like they're just going to burn everyone to the ground.
Well, I think that's why Tyrion is coming to town to help her train the dragons because he's the one that's read all the knowledge on her family, and I think that's why he's needed right now.
Yeah, if anyone can do it, it's going to be awesome. They're my two favorite characters on the show, so putting the two of them in the same room is just absolute. It's going to be money for me, assuming they get into the same room.
One last question for you guys. Go ahead.
Well, just to put your minds at ease, just real quick, Eric. He says that he saw Grey Worm in the preview that he was okay.
Okay.
So Graham's okay. Oh. Barristan's dead.
Barristan.
But Graham's okay. So there's
I guess we'll find out next week, but how do you guys feel about the tournaments? Are those coming back? It seems like she's still against like the gladiator type fighting, but
yeah, I don't know. I don't think she's the type to give in to terrorism, but I think that when Jorah comes back, see Barristan's gone.
Right.
She kind of needs a friend.
He can save the day.
She kind of needs a friend. She needs that counsel. And I think that he's going to, I don't know, I think he might say, how would he say it? let him fight Khaleesi.
Let the men have their ways, Khaleesi.
That was so perfect. Let's roll into predictions. And Ben, I think you were wanted to ask us all a question.
Well, my question is actually less about plot. So my point, all I wanted to suggest was, do you think Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen, is the most sought-after actress on television by every man that watches television?
Like, I love her so much.
Like, I want her to be my wife, and I've never met her in person. I just, love her so much.
I want her to be my wife, and I'm straight. Yeah. Like, she's incredible and wonderful and so powerful and badass. So, yeah, I have a total girl crush on her.
Did you guys see her stand-in that looks like exactly like her Instagram thing?
She looks like the Instagram version, though. She's not as she's not quite as regal.
So I think Ryan has some rapid-fire questions for us. Just one-word answers, guys.
All right, well, just short answers, okay, guys? All right, so if you're on the online chat, ask us some quick questions. Going to rapid-fire them off. Okay, here we go. All right, Kristen, Veronica asks... the comments are going so fast. I'm sorry. Yeah, here they go.
Crazy.
Eric asks us, the fighting pits, I hope we see them soon. Will the dragons be a part of it?
Well, can't imagine the dragons will be in the fighting pits.
Kristen, go!
No, I don't think the dragons will be part of it.
Okay. There will be no more fighting pits if the dragons are part of it. Yeah,
exactly.
Here we go, Ben. Veronica asks, are they going to put Jorah in the pits?
Oh. I hope so, Khaleesi.
goodness.
And I think we touched on that. Cersei Solis, who's the worst mother? Go.
Oh, goodness. The worst mother? Solis? Definitely. Because Cersei, Cersei is an evil, evil woman, but she loves her children.
Yeah, and she'll do anything for them.
Yes, she loves her children.
Well, thank you guys for joining us this week. It looks like next week Sansa's in trouble, and we're going to get some dragons. I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape, or check out my blog, cinematicescape.com.
I'm Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram, and occasionally on Periscope.
I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, and soon to be Periscope at Autumn Chiklis.
And I'm Ryan Malady. You can find me at Ryan Malady on all your favorite social media platforms. Valer do Harris, everybody.
All right, guys, don't forget to download, rate, subscribe. We're on iTunes, we're on YouTube, we're on SoundCloud, and we're also on Periscope from time to time. All right, guys, until next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.